Sounds like a real Game of Groans to me.
Oh!
Yeah!
This is episode 72 of the Insert Credit Podcast. I'm Alex Jaffe, and my favorite fake language in a video game is the non-Italian spoken in the Mario and Luigi games.
Wahoo!
I'm Frank Zaffaldi, and my favorite fake language in a video game is the one that Tim is going to talk about, so I'm just going to let him do it.
Oh, yeah, my name is Tim Rogers, and my favorite fake language in a video game is the one that is in Panzer Dragoon, Dragoon Spy, Panzer Dragoon Saga, Panzer Dragoon Orta, Shadow of the Colossus, Eco, and Breath of Fire 5 Dragon Quarter.
Yep. So, since I knew that my name was after Tim's, and I wasn't going to get to say that one, I had to think about a different one. And so I'm going to pretend that my favorite fake language is the written language in Nier, which is actually based on the like a certain strand of DNA, and it has a lot of encoded messages in it, and that's pretty interesting. But really, the true answer is Panzer Dragoon language.
That's pretty cool. How did it make it into all those other games?
Big strong muscles.
There's some big coincidence of people who knew each other and liked each other. Another cool language, I actually like the fake written language in the Zelda games, and I think it looks cool. It looks like it could be real. And a good honorable mention is the absolutely horrible language in Jade Empire, which is like set in a fantasized China, right? But they just have, you just look at like these scrolls that are very obviously Chinese scrolls, but there's just God darn kindergarten crayon scribbles all over them. And it's like, why didn't they just use Chinese? And it's like, in all the interviews, there was like an interview on IGN where it's like, they hired a linguist from Harvard University who made up their language. And the language is literally like, you walk up to a guy and he's like an elder in a village, right? And you walk up to him and you're like, oh, and it's like, he only speaks the old language. And then you say hello to the guy, and he goes, ching chong, chang a bing bong, dong a wing wong, right? And it's like really, really horrible. It's like extremely, hideously bad, because there are so many Chinese dialects that you could have just picked one, and there's over a billion Chinese people that you could have just got one of them. It's real easy to find them. They're like 1/6 of the world, you know, instead of just getting some white dude to make ching chong bing a ding a wing wong sounds.
But Tim, Harvard. You're forgetting Harvard.
Yeah. Well, I think it was Harvard. Yeah, but that guy made this constructed language, and it's just like, it's BS.
You know, they also have enough dead languages over there that they could have used. You could have used Tongut. That language is dead and weird and interesting.
Yeah.
And there are people that don't speak that, but could fake it a lot better than ching chong bing bong.
Ching chong bing a wing wong, dang a chong a wing wong.
Ding it's dang, like, wada wada bing bang.
It's like really bad. It's like if there's everybody who's watching this, check it out. It's got to be on YouTube somewhere. It's really hilarious.
I've actually never interacted with that game, so I'm going to go YouTube that up a little bit later.
It's a game of cool, well, I mean, you played Dragon Age, right?
I played Dragon Age.
It's by some of the same dudes. It's BioWare. It's indeed. One of those like BioWare weird B, not B team so much as like B plus team project. So it's like a big world RPG, but it's not Star Wars and it's not medieval. But it's a really weird collection of mistakes.
Sounds like a real Game of Groans to me.
Oh
yeah. Ooh yeah.
Nice. Tim. Do you want to count that as your topic, or do you have another topic in mind to start this show?
I wasn't aware I was supposed to be thinking of a topic.
Then let's skip you entirely. Unless you want to come up with something on the fly.
Let's see. I'll come up with something on the fly, maybe two or three questions in. Can we do
All right. Then here's one of mine. Why do so many games which escape development hell end up a disappointment? And how have the exceptions, if any, avoided these pitfalls?
Well, I think most games, I mean, I think Rare is the game that doesn't get into a little bit of development heck, at least. Mm-hmm. But so I guess the ones that escape still being good games are the ones that are given more time and thus more money to become, you know, at least a good thing, if not the thing that the folks making it originally intended. That's what I would say. The ones that enter and never return either don't have enough money to finish up and just have to come out, or mm-hmm. have extremely difficult, like, management problems that are just stymieing creativity and stopping people from doing their jobs, or letting people do just whatever, which is what happened with that Keita Takahashi MMO thing that was just unbridled creativity left unchecked, and they just had, you know, for one class you could finish the game in 2 hours, and another class it was like 50, and they just, nothing was balanced and nothing was together, and the end.
Wait, what game are you talking about?
Keita Takahashi's MMO.
Glitch thing, or whatever it was called.
Yeah, Glitch, I guess.
Yeah, I remember hearing about it, and it was gone and dead before I ever satisfied the curiosity to glimpse a screenshot of that particular game. Which it wasn't that I, you know, no offense to Mr. Takahashi, but, you know. That guy lives in San Francisco now, doesn't he? We should go hang out with him.
Yeah, he does. Maybe we should go say hi. You know,
he recognized me from the Dyad commercial.
Oh, that's
He's like, you're that guy in that Dyad commercial. I'm like, yeah, and I also, like, talked to you, like, 10 years ago. And he's like, oh, I don't remember that. And I'm like, yeah.
Interesting thing that came out of that Keita Takahashi thing, just before you go on, is they did release 200 of his design ideas that were just, like, scribbles with a tiny little mechanic attached. And that was really kind of fun to just look at and understand why that game didn't work.
Well, like, that's true of the Playground stuff too, right?
Yeah, basically.
Like, if you look at his Playground drawings, it's like wow, so many children would have died if they built this. Like, Jeffy, you are, like, rubbing the heck out of your microphone.
Yeah, he loves that mic. It's just his buddy.
So what I was going to say is that, to Brandon's original point, like, I think most games hit a point where it's like, okay, this is garbage and we're almost out of time. So we either need more time or we need to just, like, throw a bunch of this out and sew it up and get it out. And that's just how it works. So they'd escape hell and come out good if they find more time or money, or had a producer that, like, kept things on schedule, or they come out and they're not as good as they could have been.
Yeah, so you can cut stuff satisfactorily. Like, with Gunhouse, this game that is still not done, we did have to extend the amount of time we were going to work on it. We were supposed to be done with it a month and a half ago. And that's just, you know, us not eating for a little bit. But we had, like, a campaign mode set up for it. And we had a much more intricate shop, and we had some other things that we wanted to do. We were going to have a metal system that you used to advance. And we just got rid of all that stuff and cut it down to something that is infinite and something you can play forever. And I'm actually not at all disappointed with that, but we did have to cut, like, half of what we were going to do.
So what are we talking about, Jaffe, when you tell us that we're in the heck and then that we're hip deep in the stuff that became good? What's an example of that for you? What do you think is a game that was
deep in the stuff and became good?
I think Duke Nukem Forever, yeah, was deep in the stuff, you know, the heck, and then it came out and it was okay. How many games like that are there? I feel like if there's something wrong with it, burn it and do something else.
I mean, usually. Mother 3 comes to mind. That took a lot of forms before it was finally released.
Yeah, that was... I don't know if that was ever in the heck, though. It was just...
We
totally didn't like it, and they just canceled it.
Well, that's not... I mean, I read... Maybe you read the same thing. There's this huge roundtable talk between Iwata, Miyamoto, and Itoi about... Like, it was published right after the original Mother 3 was canceled, and it wasn't really that it was in development heck so much as it was just kind of what I was saying before. It's like, yeah, it's kind of garbage right now, but like that's just because it's missing a bunch of stuff, and we're out of time. And that's why they canceled it. It's just it would have taken too much effort to fix it up and get it out.
There's this is it's hard to call it good. Again, we've had this discussion many times, but Deadly Premonition was canceled 7 times and took a whole bunch of years before it came out. And and that game has qualities that I'm glad exist in video games. If we can't call it good, and
yeah, so that's an example.
Yeah.
Team Fortress 2 was first announced in 1998.
Yeah,
I don't know if that's heck so much as that's Valve is just really cool.
Yeah, they're just polishing it forever. Like Blizzard can do that too. They'll just be like, we're not ready with this. We have millions of dollars.
In the Japanese game industry, they will announce stuff as like just now in development that's been in development for 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, they
like when I was working at Grasshopper, they announced that Shadows of the Darned, like, after it had just been languishing, just, like, flopping like a dolphin that has suddenly teleported to the middle of, like, a Walmart, you know? Just, like flopping on the cold floor for, like, 4 years, right? Just this hideous, unsalvageable game that went through 100 different forms in a year, you know? And, I imagine the same thing was with the Final Fantasy 13 when you read about the development process of that. It was a heck of logistics is what it was. It was hundreds of artists just turning out art and making these environment backgrounds and being like, yeah, I made this. This is probably something. And them just going, yeah. And then they've got this big folder full of images, snapshots of environments, and they're just like, what is all of this? You know, and like that's a heck, and I feel like that game I mean, who even knows what it was supposed to be when it started, you know? Who even knows what they were going to do with that? It's probably not what they made.
Yeah, they certainly didn't know.
Yeah. So it's like I think of I think that in a game that's good, it was the heck of it is just part of a struggle. You know,
I would imagine that both of, do they call themselves Team Eco? Like the Eco Shadow of the Colossus guys?
No, they're like Sony production division, Sony internal production division number 3.
I would imagine that
number 1.
Yeah, it might be number 1. It might have, maybe they graduated.
I would imagine that both of those games had pretty hellish development. I mean, like, you know, Eco started on PS1, and like it seems from outside observation and maybe from some things I've heard, I can't recall that, like, Ueda seems like a guy who changes his mind a whole lot, which is kind of the easiest way to put a game into heck.
Mm-hmm.
I take it that those games were serious heck.
Yeah.
And not in a good way. I mean, they're so restrained ultimately because I feel like those are the only mechanics of an ambitiously long list that they could possibly make work, you know? Like, the way the games are so restrained and small and spare. That's what I feel, anyway.
Because,
right. I mean, I know Fumito Ueda, that guy just loves Burnout and Burnout Paradise and NBA Jam and all these, you know, it's like, he has all these weird scattered influences. I feel like there's no way The Last Guardian can be a good game based on exactly whatever it was that they had the idea for when they started making the game. I feel like if it ends up being a good game, it's going to be all because of new stuff that got introduced later.
I agree. Well, that's probably true with Shadow of the Colossus also. What's that?
Oh, exactly.
You know
Who
what
knows
I say?
What that game was?
When you're going through development hell, keep going.
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Our next topic. Which third-party developers would you most like to see making the next spin-off Zelda game?
Oh, man, Zeldos. Zelda games. Oh, because you're saying this in light of today's announcement of, what is it, Hyrule Warriors?
Yes.
Where they made a Zelda-like, or a Dynasty Warriors game starring Zelda characters. I'm going to tell you what about that, okay? Guys, I played the new Zelda on an airplane. I was dead tired. I had not slept the night before, and I got on this airplane, and I popped out that Zelda, and I swear to God, it kept me awake for the whole 5 hours. That game is god darn fantastic.
So you're saying it's a five-hour energy of video games.
Yes, yes, it is the five-hour energy drink of god darn video games. I would even recommend it to Brandon, because it is such a good action game. On top of, I mean, it is a quote-unquote Zelda game, but it's so streamlined, and the action is so sharp and so good, and the level design of the first dungeon was like, I want to get like a video of it and just do like a screen-by-screen breakdown of it, like an analysis of how good the level design is, right? So it's like action was one of the things people never talked about with Zelda Link to the Past. They don't talk about it now, is that it was such a great action game on top of being an adventure with a quest and a story. It's a really good action game. And then the newer Zelda games became 3D, and they focused on story and atmosphere and whatever, and they kind of lost the sense of being an action game. But they brought it back in this new one. And then today they announced this goddarn Dynasty Warriors game by the Dynasty Warriors guys, starring Zelda characters, and Link is just spinning around with his sword, and there's just ropey crap and dudes flying around, and it just looks like trash garbage, you know? Mm-hmm. With trash garbage with a cute Zelda aesthetic, but, you know, still trash garbage. And I'm like, man, you know, I just had myself, you know, my years of thinking Link to the Past was a great action game all vindicated, and now they're just like, yeah, but, and now they're like, we made a Zelda that's an action game, is like how they're pitching it. And it's like, man, now they're just trying to...
You just made a Zelda that's an action game.
Yeah, what they're doing is they're trying to unscrew the Oreo cookie, you know? And what happens when they do that is somehow the cream just kind of... They twist it, and the cream is just kind of left there in the middle, and it just falls on the ground. That's what they're doing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, the cream doesn't get stuck on either side of the cookie. It just falls out. God darn it. So the team I would like to see make a Zelda spinoff game, I would like to see the team that made this Zelda A Link Between Worlds make a four-player co-op HD top-down Zelda game that's just like Gauntlet, but with Zelda.
So awesome.
I would like to see them just give a whole bunch of studios, like whoever is not terrible and would do this, which is kind of suicide. Just let any studio that wants to make one for, like, I don't know, $100,000, which isn't very much money, right? But, like, just see what a smaller studio, like a Cappy or a Double Fine or whatever, wants to do in, like, I don't know, even like a two-hour Zelda experience, and just have a weird mixtape of, like a Zelda mixtape compilation of weird little games would be really cool.
This isn't the first time that Nintendo's given their Zelda property to third-party developers. Capcom developed Oracle of Ages and Seasons Oracle and the Minish Cap.
Let's not forget the CDI outings. Yes.
I like them. I think they're funny.
Yeah, me too.
That's
you know who I want to see. Nothing has been said about them in the entire internet.
So wait, you're talking Zelda spinoffs. I would like to see Naughty Dog make a real Zelda game. Like I would like to see that. That's
like a
not
proper Zelda game.
Naughty Dog. I would like to see Valhalla Games, makers of Devil's Third, which was never released. Devil's Turd, as they call it in Japan.
Yeah.
I would like to see them try to make a Zelda action game more than I'd ever want to see those Dynasty Warriors fools making it. No offense to Dynasty Warriors, but the games are for fools, you know? I mean, fool dumbos. So
yeah,
it's for.
It's true.
Fool dumbos. I'd like to see Epic Games make it like a Zelda crossbow shooter.
Yeah.
I want to see the Rayman 2D team, whatever they're calling themselves, Ubisoft, whatever. I want to see their take on it with that Ubi art stuff.
There is a crossbow Gears of War. It's called Hunter.
Oh, I know Hunter.
Yeah, it's pretty bad.
I'm going to stick by my answer that I want to see the team that made A Link Between Worlds make a hardcore Mario Party of Gauntlet games. Sort of Four Swordsy, but Four Swords had too much cute stuff in it, where it's like, talk to this guy, you know, and look on your screen, what color is his icon? Tell your friends, you know. I just want it to be just hardcore overhead hack and slash, just Gauntlet with that level of polish that A Link Between Worlds has. God darn fantastic game.
How about the team that did Zynga slots within Zynga?
Yeah, have them do Zelda Fishing.
Yeah.
have them do a Zelda Fishing game.
Yeah. On Facebook.
Where it's just Facebook fishing.
I'm trying to think about, like, what team would I care a lot about? I care enough about them doing a Zelda that I would be like, I guess I'll pick that up.
My only answer to that is Cappy, honestly.
Yeah, Cappy could make me interested, I think. But It's you know, I don't have a horse in this race, so it's hard for me to think about what.
We'll get you a horse, Brandon. All right. We'll get you a horse.
Ipona.
I know that.
Seriously, when I'm done with this Zelda game, which will definitely be before I get back to California, I'm gonna let you borrow it. I'm gonna tell you what. If it don't grab you in the first like 20 minutes, you're some kind of poser. No offense. It's actually like. It's like Die Hard good. Like it is like real. I mean, I was really impressed with the first like 20 minutes of it. Like that goddamn Skyward Sword, the last AAA Zelda, takes like 5-6 hours before you get into a dungeon, and it's all talking, walking around and talking to the fuzzy animal characters and the happy townspeople and all this boring trash.
Yeah, they really Sonic Adventured it up there.
Yeah, they gutted that all right out. They scooped all the seeds out of that pumpkin, you know, and they just give you a jack-o'-lantern. They just put it right in your hands right at the beginning. It's like, yeah, you got a sword. Yeah, now you're killing everybody. And it's just like, yeah.
I know if Cavia made a Zelda game, it would explore the inherently incest-like undertones of a generationally themed Zelda timeline, and the fact that Link and Zelda are romantic interests to each other in each generation.
I'd hang out with Zelda. That's all I got to say about that.
All right. Let's move on.
Final answer is Arcane Kids, authors of Bubsy3D.com.
Sure. Oh, yeah, give those guys a shot at it. I would
get them on the horn.
Yeah, let them make a Wands of Gamelon 3D.
Yeah, I'd do that. Oh, man, they should.
Gons of Whamelon.
Sure.
Gons of Whamelon is one of my favorites.
Ryan from New Zealand is a listener who claims he's been with us since the first episode, but this is his first time writing in.
Hi, Ryan from New Zealand.
Design a game that takes into account the player blinking.
Oh, you would ask that.
Typical Ryan.
Wait, what? I don't get it. What was going to say?
The
that
player
again?
Blinking.
Blinking, like blinking your eyes.
Yeah, the game can sense when you blink and takes that into account.
Oh, I think that new Kinect can do that. I was impressed that the Kinect 2.0, Ben Burbank brought his over to my house, and I signed in with my name, and it's like, it like brings up a little camera, and it shows me, and it's like, is this you? And there's like an arrow pointing at me, and I go, yeah. And then it's like, we were like, Ben Burbank waves, and it goes, do you want to switch to Ben Burbank's account, Ben Burbank? And I'm like, whoa. You can, like, see who people are. I'm ready for a game that you can blink to control. What do we got? Let's talk about it. You're on. Caller number one, Frank Zapaldi.
All right. Well, Tim, hi. I'm a longtime listener, first-time caller. So I was thinking that, you know, that Google Glass, you blink to take a picture. So maybe there's, like a photography game. It's kind of a sexy thing where someone ties you up, right? So you can't move, and all you can do is blink. And like, it requires two players, I guess, because one has to have rope. And you have to like look at things. And when cool stuff happens, you got to blink to take the picture. And if you accidentally blink at the wrong times, then it hurts you in some way, maybe with fire.
I would definitely just make a one of those one button games. Because those are nice.
Yeah.
Where you blink and it hits the button for you, and you can do all kinds of things. My friend Caitlin Gadd made this like dungeon crawler that didn't have enough ideas in it because it was just a game jam game that was beefed up a little bit after. But it was, you know, you're walking through a dungeon and you hit the one button to make certain things happen with certain timing, but it's different in every room, and so you have to, it recontextualizes what the button does, and it was quite interesting and fun. You were like somebody walking above on the walls above somebody who's going through a dungeon below, and so you're helping them get through.
What if you could only move when your eyes were closed?
That would be sad for me.
That's not blinking, that's closing.
It's closing your eyes is just a slow blink, Frank.
I don't know, what if you never open them again?
And it's the longest blink, which is the title of my new novel.
Well, you know, like,
The
longest blink. Very early on in this podcast life, I said that I was working on a game for Rob the Robot, which didn't end up happening. Yeah, so it didn't end up happening, and I don't know if I ever talked about the design of it, but like that was a design about blinking a robot's eyes. The concept was that, like, Rob can see the TV. You know, Rob looks for a flash on the TV to know what to do. And I had a game concept where the storyline was that you had this little baby robot, and its behavior could only be programmed through observation. So you had to take Rob out into the real world, meaning, you know, like in the TV, and expose him to the world to learn behavior. But if he saw bad stuff, he turned into a bad robot, so he had to shield his eyes at the right time. Like, if if like there was a guy on the street like exposing himself, he had to shield his eyes in time. But like, you know, if there was like someone I don't know, eating ice cream, he had to make sure he saw it. So that's kind of a blinking game,
I guess.
When you first said it, I kind of thought that we were talking about like how, you know, when you get hit in a video game, your character blinks and is invincible for a little while. That was the first thing that I thought of.
That's a good way to interpret that question, yeah.
Yeah, but it's the player who's supposed to blink, so it doesn't actually work, I guess. The end.
I think we dealt with that rather well.
I guess.
Okay. Killer 7 had a blink thing, didn't it?
I'm thinking like Ridiculous Fishing introduced to me this weird feeling of I'm tilting the phone. I just played Ridiculous Fishing for like a half an hour this morning because what else am I going to do? There's like a foot of snow outside. And I'm just playing it in my bed sitting here. You say, like, the first time I did like the chainsaw where you have to touch the screen as you're tilting to go down, and it starts shaking kind of gently, right? And it's like, you, like letting go of the button is like really scary because like when you let go, you could possibly just die right away. So I'm thinking like, something like Ridiculous Fishing where you have to have your face on the screen, right? And you're tilting it. And if you close your eyes, you're invincible. Does that make sense?
Have you guys all played Ridiculous Fishing?
Yeah. So it's like you close your eyes to activate the chainsaw. So it's like you're closing it in little bursts. So when you close your eyes, you're invincible and you burn through enemies. But when you open them, you're back to not being invincible. So let's say your character's at the top of the playing field, and you can sight the screen and see like a gauntlet of enemies, and you just close your eyes long enough, knowing, like feeling the speed that you're moving, to burn through the enemies, and then open them right about when you think it's safe to open them. So, but I mean, you don't want to close your eyes for too long and advance more than one screen length, because then you might end up with an obstacle right in front of you when you unblink. So basically you're just closing your eyes in small bursts, keeping them open as hard as you can. And you have like a limited amount of power, like a power meter that recharges. I mean, I guess I'm not cool with really weirdly conceptual games, but that's how I would use it as a control implement. I mean, it could even be a game where you're not even tilting or anything. You're just looking at the screen and blinking.
If that's sounds pretty cool.
That's all I got. You know, okay. What? You know, I mean, what, right? You know, what?
In an effort to be more inclusive, the Penny Arcade Expo will now include diversity lounges.
Oh, the DL.
What, is that true?
Yeah.
Did you not hear this, Brandon?
No, I didn't hear about this.
The announcement of this was pretty embarrassing. But how embarrassing will it eventually be in practice?
So okay, we so Brandon in first before we reply here. So Penny Arcade is in an effort, like Javi said, to promote diversity. They at each of the three expos, they have an area that they're calling the Diversity Lounge, which is a place to come learn about diversity in games and like learn about efforts to do that and play like games from diverse people and. I don't know if there's like separate diverse water fountains or restrooms or what, but like that's kind of where my mind goes when I hear.
Yeah,
about
so
it.
Those guys tried so hard and so wrong to do that.
Yeah, so I read the little actual thing where they announce it, right? Whereas, you know, I had read many tweets and blog reactions and Kotaku links about it before I went and read the actual thing, right? So the actual thing is what they did was they took one of the really big sections at their Penny Arcade Expo, like a really big section, and they offered free booth space to people with not as many financial opportunities, et cetera, to bring in the weirder, more interesting, less mainstream games and stuff, right? And ultimately, and I have to say, I'm as extreme liberal as you guys, but it sounds like a really nice thing that they're doing, but man, it just sounds really bad to summarize it in a sentence.
It's like you know, maybe they shouldn't have called it that.
Yeah, they shouldn't have, they definitely, but I mean, what else are you going to call it, you know?
But see, they're in this,
thought about it, and it's like...
Well, you just call it like the something like the like that that's not related. It's like the something like, playground or like
the IGF has the Nuovo Award. It could just be
exactly
the Nuovo Lounge or something.
Yeah,
put a word on it. I guess that's where I would
the
start.
Bonus stage.
The El Vino Lounge.
The problem is that they're in this awful position for a company or even a person where it's like, I don't know, did you ever know a person, and I'm sure everyone here has, where like you just kind of got pushed over the edge into being annoyed with them and not liking them anymore, and like,
oh yeah,
it just became completely irreparable, right? Like they could completely turn around and fix everything, and it's just like, no, I've already like, my brain has cut you off completely.
I made
like,
my decisions about
this. and it would be very difficult, if not impossible, for me to ever like you again. And like, I feel like Penny Arcade is there, at least with me. And
yeah, they're definitely there for me as well.
Yeah.
You know?
It's really too bad because, you know, I used to talk to those guys and, I liked them. And then it just...
I guess I have to have my game video ball at their thing in Boston. Because you know they got us a booth.
Yeah,
so, you know, come on down and check it out.
Well, Jerry's really nice. I like Jerry, but you know Jerry is not his entire company. So
yeah, but you know he's also defended the stuff that goes on as well. They're pretty on the same page. It's
fundamentally.
Yeah,
it's
I mean
like,
it does. It does sound like a good thing to have free booth space for people that can't afford it. I don't know how people are going to prove they can't afford it, but you know, it's a good thing to do for people. It's just, man, they I don't know, they have community managers and things, but they can't be doing the best of jobs because they keep running into these problems, a lot of which are semantic. And the way they talk about things, they gotta just
they have a lot of communication related problems in that organization, and it's kind of exasperating to think about it, and it makes me really sad that people just it's just that there's all these dumb weird people out there, and it's like they could be cool if they weren't such dumb weirdos, you know. Dumb jerks, I think, is the phrase that I'm looking for.
I feel like I easily could have been one of those dumb weirdos.
Oh, yeah.
I just was lucky enough to fall in with a different crowd.
Yeah.
Heck yeah.
That's true of anybody, I guess.
Yes.
I
mean,
Yeah, but
I'm my own.
I don't know what else to say about those this thing, because it's just it seems like a good thing, but I can't get past just completely dismissing this entire organization and like laughing at anything they do that's like even a little bit ill advised. I can't stop that.
Yeah, they're just a bunch of lame weird sleazos.
Bunch of lame weirds.
As I said before when we talked about the Penny Arcade Expo and the controversy, as the British pronounce it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I love that.
As I said, I went there and I was inside on the expo floor for all of a half an hour last year or this year, and I saw a whole bunch of people who looked like they were really excited about video games and looked like they really genuinely liked video games and were probably mm-hmm. just really nice, down-home, down-to-earth, you know, good people, you know, just hundreds of them.
Yeah.
And, I mean, some of them were unattractive or had bad clothes, you know, or horrible hair and ponytails and fedoras and guys in kilts and, you know, stuff like that that's really gross. But God darn if they didn't have that enthusiasm, you know, mm-hmm. that I reckon dudes up at the top of that organization don't have too much of that, you know. And they're just a bunch of jaded, slimy, weird balls. You know?
Well, and that's what I like so much about the show, and I think we talked about this also, is that like I used to really enjoy going and absorbing some of that energy and feeling it myself. It made me excited about video games again. It made me, like, you know, proud to be a part of something in a way that like GDC does, but in a different way. And I miss that, and it's gone, and I hate them.
All right. Yeah. I think that's enough of that.
Or is it?
Why don't we move on to our custom soundtrack segment?
Okay.
Yeah, let's do it. Why not?
This week's subject is Sonic the Hedgehog 2.
Hedgehog the Sonhog. Well, since Sonic the Hedgehog 2's music was done by that man, Masato Nakamura, the bassist and primary songwriter of Japanese pop group Dreams Come True, mm-hmm. which had just become huge shortly before Sonic the Hedgehog 2 was released. And they were pretty big when Sonic the Hedgehog 1 was released. I would say that you can fit a lot of Japanese progressive funk music from the early 80s or late 70s in there, because that's Masato Nakamura's influences. I would put music by Jagatara, Japanese band Jagatara, in there. They have a song called Soda Sore, which has a really, really cheesy late 70s brass synth sound just kind of blasting through it, and there's like a hurly-burly solo in there, and it's like really weird. I would put that in there for Green Hill Zone.
I'm going to go in a different direction. And wait, no, it's Green Hill Zone because it's 2, right? Or is
Sonic the Hedgehog 2 is Emerald Hill Zone.
Oh, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
I'm stupid. But so this might be too on the nose, but I would put a bunch of New Jack Swing in there. New Edition.
Oh, man, yeah. Yeah.
New Edition and Zlook. I never knew how to pronounce that, but it's Z'LOOKE. Zlook, maybe?
I think it's Zlook.
Zlook.
It's Zlook.
It's a really bad name. This lady called Shannon has a really good song called I Want to Get Away, which is really good. I'd put in a bunch of music like that. That would get me pumping through the Sonic times. I would enjoy that. In fact, it might be fun to have non-vocal versions of those, even.
Yeah. I would rock to that.
Yeah.
I would also say that.
I was just gonna say there are hints of New Jack in 3, and it worked pretty well.
Yeah, it's true. Get some Belle Biv DeVoe in there.
Yeah,
BBD.
Like if you get Poison in there without the lyrics, that would be great.
Yeah.
Like, oh man, like for I don't know which stage you do it for. Maybe Casino Night.
Like Casino Night is perfect for the way it starts. Yeah. Like that, it sounds perfectly like Casino Night Zone almost.
Yeah.
I would say there's straight up some So Masato Nakamura, being the songwriter for Dreams Come True and also the composer for Sonic the Hedgehog, I feel like he kind of, I've heard, you know, on the anniversary soundtrack for Sonic the Hedgehog 1 and 2, there's all those demos he did. And it's like, I feel like they're just songs that he wrote that weren't good enough to turn into Dreams Come True songs. So it's like, why not just put some Dreams Come True songs in there? There's some darn good ones on those first two albums from the late 80s, like really hard brass synths and just really weird, chunky, beefy synthesizers and bass guitars and really weird stuff like that I would say is cool and energetic for that. And I mean, I'd put that in there, and man, yeah. I'm thinking, like, other Japanese rock bands of the time. I'd put some Bowie in there. I would put... Which Bowie song am I thinking?
I was just going to say, which Bowie? This Bowie?
This Bowie, yeah. That's a Bowie reference.
That's a good joke.
I would put, like, the song Baby Action in there. Baby Action.
I've heard that song.
Yeah, Baby Action's a pretty good song. I would put...
While we're wishlisting stuff, I mean, I would put a bunch of those Bowie songs that they never properly recorded and get those properly recorded, like that goddamn Cadillac whatever song.
All the live ones that they didn't record?
Exclusive for Sonic the Hedgehog 2.
Yeah, that would be super great.
Are you talking about Bowie still?
Yeah.
Talking about Bowie?
Okay. This Bowie, yeah. That Bowie from England.
This Bowie.
I would put all of that in there. I would have a good time with music like that. And I mean, I would get like some Prince and the New Power Generation in there while we're at it.
Mm-hmm.
I'd put Daddy Pop in there. Put Jughead in there. It's a good song.
I want Straight Up by Paula Abdul in my song.
Oh yeah. In our New Jack version. Yeah.
Chunky 90s stuff, man.
Yeah.
Maybe some, because I'm thinking like Sonic CD opening cinema, you know, the opening cutscene of Sonic CD, that awesome music.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I would just maybe get that band to make a bunch of music, whoever the heck they were, you know. I would put Outrun Magical Sound Shower in there. Can we do that?
For the special stage.
I think that's a good Sonic the Hedgehog song.
Have you guys heard of this dude called Rockwell?
Rockwell.
How would you say he rocks?
Pretty well. In fact, that is how he got his name, because he rocks well.
That's cool.
He's very Prince inspired in his outfits, but he's way more New Jack Swing, and he's using that old Yamaha synth, and he's really good. I think we should get some of him in there. Also, he's got a song called Tokyo, in which he proves to be one of the earlier weeaboos in America. I know we don't use that word.
I hate that word so much.
I just use it because it's... man, I still think it's kind of funny. But yeah, he's got some nonsense Japanese in there. It's great.
I only use weeaboo to describe people who read Perry Bible Fellowship.
I would put the... I would put the Prince song "I Would Die for You" in there because it loops seamlessly.
Jam 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 jam
jam jam jam jam jam jam jam jam jam jam.
This is a pretty hot soundtrack, guys.
Jam jam jam.
Yeah, I like it.
There was another one. I don't remember what it was, but yeah, who knows? I think there's just, you know, all kinds of cool music out there in the world.
Oh, and we should put in Mystic Cave Zone, the song.
Yeah.
Yeah, just keep Mystic Cave Zone in there.
There is all kinds of cool music out there in the world, which is why we're going to keep doing this segment in future episodes.
Rage Against the Machines, Killing in the Name of.
The whole soundtrack is just corn.
Chum, 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 no, you do what they told you. Because Sonic's always doing what they told you.
I would put that in the custom BioShock soundtrack.
Those who died are justified, guys.
Yeah, right. True.
I'm trying to think of Fatboy Slim stuff that would work.
Oh, man. Fatboy Slim.
Some of it would.
That guy's fat.
Or like,
Or Daft Punk, maybe?
He's actually
the song
not
from
that
Christopher Walken video.
He's not that big.
Yeah, he's really not that big. Yeah.
Some skinny little guy.
Next topic. Let's move on.
Okay.
Which video game industry personality holds the most contempt for their own creations?
Do any of them?
I think they all do. I think they all have some contempt.
At least a little.
You can't be creative without having contempt. Alfred Hitchcock once said that actually making the movie is the worst part of making a movie.
Oh, that's true.
Because in your head, it's perfect until the minute you start making it. And just the by nature, deciding to make a thing, deciding this is the creative idea I'm going to actually produce into a product, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like making that decision is foolproof, mathematically, foolproofly, the first step to hating the thing. Like you're
I got
not,
the answer.
So,
Frank,
what? I got the answer. Shigeru Miyamoto.
Why?
I don't think he's ever really been proud of any of his games. I think, like, when you read interviews with him about his games, like, posthumously, not when he's on a PR tour.
Posthumously, yeah. After he died.
Yeah, right. Well, after the game, after the game has wrapped up. Like that's what I mean. Is that not a correct word in that instance? Anyway,
I don't think so.
Only if you think that Game Developer Magazine is correct in using the word
the postmortem.
I like Anna Anthropy's interpretation as postpartum.
Well, yeah. I think like if you read any interviews with him about like the old Mario games, he's like kind of embarrassed by them, and he looks back and he's like, I wish we could have done all this other stuff better. And he's pretty genuine in interviews, which I'm really thankful for, because he's, you know, one of the most important people in game development. And he's never really come across as being proud of a game once it's done. I feel like I get the impression that he's never really satisfied. And, you know,
I'll tell you who it should be. is everyone at WayForward.
Yeah.
I thought you were saying
DuckTales, a woo-oo.
So, as I was saying about Alfred Hitchcock, you know, he really did say all that stuff, right?
Yeah.
And I remember reading that in an interview in a book on film many years ago and just thinking, you know, this makes a whole lot of sense because I've tried to write novels before. By try, I mean I wrote a whole thing and edited it and proofread it and revised it a couple of times, and then I'm just like, man, my idea was really cool. What the heck is this? And it's like, I think that in order to make anything that anybody's going to think is good at all in 50 years or so, you have to understand that the like actually activating the decision to turn your creative vision into a thing people can interpret means that you're not going to like it. It means you will not enjoy it. Like you.
Well, it requires caveats and concessions, and you know.
Exactly.
You're never going to get purity of vision when it's outside of your own head. It requires a lot of concessions, and
yes,
that is if people that are okay with it are probably the happiest with their games, and people that are not so okay with it are probably the least happy. So I would say maybe, you know, somebody like Chris Petrowski at Cappy is probably unhappy with his games because he's one of those purity of vision kind of guys that really has that. Or, like, I don't know, I feel like Tim Ziggurat, the small one, was pretty much what you wanted it to be, right? I mean, So, like that, if it depends on the scale and scope of the thing you're doing. Like, if you can define it, then you can just make it.
I'll tell you what, I played Ziggurat today.
Yeah, man, so did I.
Yeah.
But, like, the thing about Ziggurat, though, is that, like, me and Porter were at that time working on and still are working on a much bigger,
yes, of course,
meticulously level-designed first-person shooter called Ziggurat that's set in the same world and all that. And we did, like, I mean, going into it, we made the concessions that it's like, okay, I'm going to, we're just going to make this little game, and that's it. And it's like, it was by nature a compromise at the beginning. It is what I wanted. I just wanted something that I could play that was exactly like that on my iPhone.
But, turned out pretty good.
Yeah. I hate making movies because the actual mechanics of making movies are not fun to me at all. None of the parts of it are any fun, and that's why I did not go into film. Because, you know, like, there's the creative problem, but the bigger problem for me is I just don't like the act of movie making, like the actions of movie making. It's not fun.
I don't know about I think making stuff. I mean, making my stupid little videos that I make, you know, no matter how meticulously planned and written out it is, it's like, man, like the act of making it is just really deflating and depressing.
It's a slog, and it takes all of the fun and joy out of it. By the time you're done, you're just like, well, I'm done. At least for me.
The only way to make it is to endure the development heck of it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But, yeah, on the other hand, I got a game like Video Ball where it's not development heck because it was fun after the first 6 hours of prototyping, and it's just been fun ever since. So I guess maybe I'll be satisfied with Video Ball, and that'll make me a complete poser. And Shigeru Miyamoto will come to my house, and he won't even knock on the door. He'll just, like, shoulder blast his way in, and then he'll field goal kick me in the balls, and then my head will be stuck in the roof.
I am so sick of that happening.
Yeah.
Someone's got to stop him.
Yeah, Miyamoto just loves field goaling dudes in the nards.
Someone's got to shoot that master sword.
I mean, it's got to be so expensive to fly around and do that in the middle of production.
Yeah, but I mean, who else is going to do it, huh?
Yeah. Someone's got to.
Yeah, someone's got to.
Let him take that sword on a plane. They know what he's going to do with it, but he's Shigeru Miyamoto.
Yeah, he's a cool guy.
Yeah. A deep cable television network attempts to tread the waters of a video game-themed programming.
And VGTP.
And they want the three of you to produce a nightly 4-hour programming block of your own design.
Oh, Lord.
Oh, okay.
These guys are ambitious.
Yeah, 4-hour block, okay. Huh?
Okay, I'll tell you one show that I liked that existed before, just so we can have a frame of reference, possibly, is this Starcade, I think it was called, show.
Oh, yeah.
And it was, there was just an old dude, and he gave some kids the opportunity to play this arcade machine or that arcade machine and try to get a score or complete some challenge. And then they would have to do it, and he would just be talking about it, and be like, oh, well, you didn't quite get it there, Billy. And he was just kind of subtly tearing them down as they're not doing as well as they liked. Like, just having an old man yelling at some kids that are trying to play Galaga.
For 4 hours. Just
No, not for 4 hours. That's
part of the programming.
That's 1 hour.
Okay, so the 1 hour, or maybe it's a half hour, right? But part of the programming is that format. But it's an old man who doesn't know games at all, but is forced to narrate. Like, that could be really good. I will say, and I don't want to like lift this concept because it's been tried and failed so many times, and even we've tried it, and I don't think it works. But like the reason Mystery Science Theater was ever on the air was because a new cable network needed to fill 2 hours, and like that seemed like a good way to do it is just recycle the stuff we already have the rights to, being these movies, and just add a layer on top of it. So, like, I think if it's 4 hours a night, we got to be doing some recycling, is kind of my point.
So I think one thing you can do there is it would be a lot of work and maybe impossible, but you could get someone like Vito to play through games. And actually, no. So we can get one of those YouTube commenters not commentators, commentators.
Who, oh, those Yortubbers, yeah.
Who talk over the games, but one of them that's not shrill and obnoxious, one of them that's actually kind of interesting and funny.
Cause like, one of them doesn't have a goatee or a fedora.
If you watch Vito talking about Final Fantasy XII, he's like, man, they got this whole kingdom. None of them can afford shirts. They got armor all over the their bodies. Nobody's got a T-shirt. You know, it's funny stuff.
So how often is Vito on? Every night? Live?
Yeah, we'd probably have to alternate Vito and one other person is what we have to.
You're talking 4 hours a night of that?
No. This is another hour of programming.
Yeah.
And then I think actually one good segment to have would be one like this, because people like to hear opinions about video games, and they like to agree with them, and they like to disagree with them. So have a panel conversation where we can like, oh, do we have a clip of that? And then we'll show a thing that happened at Evo, or we'll show.
Okay, so we'll have SportsCenter for like.
Yeah, we'll have SportsCenter for video games.
Yeah. Except,
we'll talk about esports. Yep. Or we'll talk about.
Well, it's just whatever happened that day. Out. It's just wrap up the day with occasional, pre-recorded segments. I'm into that. I think going back to recycling, we're going to need to recycle. This is getting expensive now. I think you could have maybe a half hour or more a night of pre-recorded speed runs that we've licensed from the creators.
I'd watch those. Cool. I'd put my body all over those.
Watch that right up.
And you can just have like a host that does intros to each one or something. And,
Way you can do the intros, which would work super well, we could either do intros or we could do like a pop-up video style thing where it talks about the techniques, because I think sometimes the techniques are super interesting.
Pop-up video technique is going to take way too much production time to do daily, I feel. Like that's someone's job at that point.
We could just talk about it in advance.
That's why I'm saying like we intro advanced. And we're like... Yeah. Look out at 2 minutes where he's gonna like break into the RAM of the game, and
is exactly the thing that I did on the television show that I produced 56 episodes of during college. It was all about USC's student films, and I had to write intros and outros for all of these, where the host would say something interesting about them. And what I wound up doing was I stopped watching the short films after maybe the first 20 short films, which maybe was 2 weeks worth of episodes, and then I just started writing funny stuff based on the title. So it'd be like
so this podcast,
it's like The Lost Woman. Did he ever find her? We'll never know. Anyway, moving on. And who knows if there was even a woman in it. I never saw them. We could do that.
So it would, like, I think you can...
Speedruns is good.
Speedruns are, like, let's plays tend to be too long, I think, but, like, that's something else to consider. Like, I think at least half of our 4-hour nightly blocks needs to be, like, taken from somewhere else.
Here's what it could be. It could be speed runs, and it could also be classic esports like StarCraft or League of Legends or Street Fighter battles.
Yeah.
Just like the highlights of Evo 2008 are all here for this hour.
We could also put cops or cheaters in there.
Cops or Law and Order.
Yeah. So
actually, I would watch all this stuff. By the way,
I would too.
Is my microphone working?
Yeah, I want to hear.
I've like tried to interject. The record will show about like 20 times, and I've just been like steamrolled over every time.
I was just gonna say,
I'll be real generous and I'll personally produce a 1-hour block of video ball matches every day and just put them on. I swear to God, I sit here watching this game all day. I got 4 emails from people today, people I've never heard from, going, I've watched all of your video ball streams like 5 times now. I'm like, man, I'm not the only one doing this. I don't even know who these people are. So there you go.
You got some on your hands here, Tim.
I've created a game that you can just, it's like a fishbowl. Just kind of look at it. I will personally produce that. Excerpt them and everything.
If you have a really good licensing budget too, we could have a half hour of cartoons a day. Like we could license Pac-Man and Super Mario. And
I don't want those. personally. Okay. But okay. You can have them if you want. I just, like, I'm not...
I'm taking the total, like
those were so bad.
Here.
Maybe like, those could be on the network, but outside the scope of the 4-hour programming block.
Yeah, I mean, there's... Yeah, I guess I've got 20 more hours to fill, so they're pretty
right.
About this stuff.
So, in lieu of a lightning round this week, I'd like you guys to help me out with something.
In lieu?
Yeah.
I don't want to be in lieu.
Sorry.
What
I want
then?
To be in...
As you might be aware, the library arcade I tried to construct last week was
library
kind of
arcade?
Bust. Yeah. The visitors thought it was a little too esoteric, you know, the 4 basic elements theme. Not a lot of them were getting it. So
sure.
I've come up with a new concept, and I'm hoping you can help contribute games to this one.
Okay.
To help you out, the first two games I'm bringing to this are Tekken 3 and Miss Pac-Man.
So you said the first two
yeah.
out of 4?
I'm bringing a bunch of games. These are just the
okay.
best two.
Okay, Tekken 3 and Miss Pac-Man, got it.
Threeken?
Tekken 3 and Miss Pac-Man?
Yeah, so what games would you bring?
Soul Calibur.
No.
Oh, why not? You don't have to tell me why not.
Just, yeah.
I think Soul Calibur would be fun, because it's also by Namco, I figured.
Hmm.
Yeah, how about Dig Dug?
No.
But Echo the Dolphin.
Just trying to get...
Absolutely not. You're just naming things from the last arcade, Frank.
Well, but also things from the last arcade that were by Namco.
Dig not Dug. Echo the Dolphin.
Dig Dug.
More like Scamco, because of how they rip you off.
All right, Tekken 3 and Miss Pac-Man.
Namcot. Can I bring...
Can I bring Double Dragon 3?
Like, so not...
Hmm.
Okay.
Is Double Dragon 3 just an extreme not?
It's very not.
The Tekken reason I was asking 3. Is because... Well, I don't... Okay, never mind.
Yeah, you don't want to give... You don't want to tip your hand?
Yeah.
Right. You don't want a TYH?
Yeah. You don't want to see...
You're going to die, actually.
Die, yeah.
Die.
I'll tell you the third game I'm bringing. The third game I'm bringing is Galaga.
Oh, Galaga.
I was going to ask about Galaga, actually. I guess I should have, because then I would have won without realizing why.
What about Ridge Racer Revolution for the Sony PlayStation?
No.
What about R4?
No. But
Rage Racer?
But, no. No, dang. Not Ridge Racer, but R4 is the closest one yet.
Interesting. Okay. How about ooh. How about Soul Calibur 3?
No.
Okay.
Soul Calibur 3 is not an arcade game.
That's true.
Doesn't matter.
Well, I mean, all the other games so far have been arcade games.
Yeah. True.
But R4 was not an arcade game either.
What about Rolling Thunder 3?
Nope.
Oh, Rolling Thunder.
Oh, that also wasn't in the arcades. Now that I think about it, I don't know if that matters, but I realize it was console.
God, Rolling Thunder 2 is so good.
Rolling Thunder?
Rolling Thunder!
Okay, the next game I'm bringing is NFL Blitz.
Oh, man.
Ooh! That's an arcade game, but it's not by Scamco.
How about Midway's The Grid?
Nope.
Oh, The Grid is so cool.
Yeah, it's a pretty good one.
Hmm. How about Street Fighter the Movie, the game?
No.
Okay.
Street Fighter the Movie, the game.
All right. We got Tekken 3, we got Miss Pac-Man, we got Galaga, and we got NFL Blitz.
Correct.
I have a theme for everything except Tekken 3, but I don't know Tekken 3.
Tekken 3's got a kangaroo in it.
Does have a kangaroo.
It has a guy made of wood in it.
Is Tekken 3, like, weird compared to the first two, or, like, not really Tekken 3?
They started to get weird on it.
It's not that much weirder, though.
But it's still, like, very much Tekken 3. It's not, like, a different game that they call Tekken 3.
It's sort of a
okay,
decent
Tekken. The last game that I'm bringing, and your last hint, is Chrono Cross.
Chrono Cross.
Chrono Cross.
Chrono Cross had the character Lucky Dan in it, who's made of straw, and he resembles Mokujin from Tekken 3.
Yeah, it was also the first Chrono sequel on a 3D platform.
Yeah.
And the only.
Miss Pac-Man's not in 3D, though.
No, it's sure not. And it's also not, like, the last in a series or anything.
You guys have one more minute to figure this out.
Galaga. Galaga's not...
Okay, listen, I'm just throwing stuff up. Galaxian?
Nope.
Space Invaders?
Nope.
Project Sylphide for the Xbox 360?
Nope.
Galaga 88?
Yes.
Okay.
What?
Galaga 88?
Galaga 88?
And can Galaga 88 and Galaga both live in the museum?
Or, yes, they can both live in the museum.
Okay.
What about Tekken versus Street Fighter?
No.
No.
Street Fighter Cross Tekken, it's called.
Yeah, I know. What about Virtua Fighter 2?
Nope.
How about Final Fight?
No.
How about Virtual
Final
Racing?
Fight? How about Final Fight if it had been released as Street Fighter 89 as originally intended?
No.
Okay.
But how about Street Fighter 2010.
Absolutely not. Okay. All right, you guys are out of time. Any last guesses to the theme?
Oh, man.
I have 100% no idea.
Correct, me too. Same.
All right, Tekken 3.
Wait. I have some idea, which is that most, if not all, of these are like sequels that aren't really sequels or like sequels under a different name or something.
All right, I'll tell you that's intentionally a red herring, Frank.
Okay.
Yeah.
Go on, I'm done.
Yep, I don't know.
Did he die? Did Jeffy die? I thought he was.
No, I'm waiting for Tim.
Oh.
Waiting. Tim's got a couple more hands and haws.
I feel like I could get this, but I mean, I've also got to go to the bathroom really bad.
All right. Well, that's Tim, if you didn't have to go to the bathroom, you'd get this.
Can we save it for next week?
No.
I feel absolutely like our listeners have to know.
Yeah.
No, you can tell them next week. They can think on it, too. They can talk about it in their chats
know,
or whatever.
They figured out the last two of them in the comments before we did. For all we know, they figured out this one as well.
I don't think they did. Let's take a look. Has anybody figured it out? There's not even any new comments because of this goddamn Google Plus garbage.
Guys, I really want to tell you.
Yeah, do it.
Tekken 3... Miss Pac-Man, Galaga, NFL Blitz, and Chrono Cross all have only one of the five vowels in their title.
Oh, man.
Oh, wow. Wow, yeah.
I thought for sure you would get that, Tim.
That's a little bit... I probably would have guessed that if I would have stared at it long enough. Mm-hmm. The next step was to type the names out.
I would have gotten it. And maybe in the future I'm going to write them down.
But yeah, I would have immediately tossed it out as being a red herring.
Yeah.
But you would have tried one of them, and then you might have known.
Yes,
so.
You would have. Because you get unlimited tries.
There's a certain degree of, what do you call it, finesse involved in making this particular word game fun.
Yeah. So you think this one was garbage?
It was a little bit high level, is all.
Yeah, all right. It's true.
I'm zeroing in here. Tim.
Ideally, a game like this, you play it over the course of like a half an hour. You know, so like that's why I chose one that was really easy, that was solved in just 8 minutes.
Yeah, but I think of you guys as really smart.
Yeah, but it's not about really intelligence so much. It's a really weirdly nuanced game. I mean, it's really weirdly. Keep trying though. These are exciting. So.
All right, I will. Thank you for joining us on this show.
You're welcome
to our listeners. You guys get no thanks. But I'm glad you're here nonetheless. Thanks. Even though thanks have been omitted. You can check up on us on our Facebook group, facebook.com/ICpodcast. You can write into us at podcast@insertcredit.com with your own questions. Make sure to get in your votes because next week's show is our Game of the Year show. We're
going
to factor in your votes, take the top 20 of those games, and rank them from best to worst.
When are we doing that show? Do we figure that out?
We'll nail that down. We'll nail that down when we're not broadcasting.
Okay. I thought we had already.
Yeah. You can follow us on Twitter. I'm at Alex Jaffe. Tim's at 108. Frank's at Frank Cifaldi. That's Frank C-I-F-A-L-D-I. And Brandon is at Necrosofty. That's Necrosoft and a Y. You can hang out with us after the show if you can figure out this comment system and want to ask us a few questions for a Q&A. You can check up on Tim's Video Ball Club by looking that up. If you're in Oakland, you should stop on by and hang out and play in this proto video game league before it sweeps the nation for real.
The next meeting is January 5th. Come on down, everybody.
You should be on the lookout for Gunhouse, Brandon's new game. What's the status?
If you want to.
Yeah, keep looking out for it. Frank's also got some irons in the fire, I believe.
There's some of them bugs. Bugs in that game. Gotta kill them bugs.
Not yet, but soon. Very exciting things from
next,
Frank.
Next year. And it's not. It's only a little bit exciting. They only played a small part in it.
Get super hyped, man. This is going to be the biggest news of 2014.
I wrote some dialogue for a game.
So the answer is Frank is the one who's most embarrassed of his creations.
Yes.
No, that's I like this game. It's a genuinely good game.
Yeah, that was just a joke.
Okay.
All right, if you want to watch me talk about some dumb Disney movies with some of my friends, you could do that on Sundays on my own show, The Mickey Mess Club. This Sunday, we're going to discuss the Lion King sequels, The Lion King 2 and The Lion King 1.5, or as it's internationally known, The Lion King 3, Hakuna Matata.
Oh, hack Matt.
I hear that means no worries. But for how long?
Forever. Yeah,
you're going to have to watch the movies to find that out, Brandon.
That's right.
I thought it sounded like you said watch the boobies, and I was like, okay.
Tim's already on it.
I'm not going to go, you know, I mean, if they're going to be there, it's like, okay, I'll just, you know, I'll take a look at them.
I'm Alex Jaffe.
I'm Frank Spaulding.
I'm Brandon Sheffield. Oh, no, I ruined
it. Went out of alphabetical order, you dumb jerk.
And soon you'll be playing with podcasts. Who knows? You might even be right now.
Podcast over, yeah!